Hey folks, welcome to a second wave COVID special episode. Sharad, how's it going, man?
It's going very well so far, dodging the bullet.
So far, but obviously. Test done yesterday. Yeah. So yeah, it's all fine.
Yeah,
and it has been some time since Long Shots. I think has come up with a new episode, almost a month probably, right?
Yeah, it's probably been a month, yeah. And we've all, you know, as it has been a little careful, and things have been somewhat affected, I guess, but it's good to come back though.
Yeah, and you know, I'm loving this remote thing, because thanks to that, we are now talking to Saurabh Ranwal from all the way from Mumbai. Mm-hmm. Hey Saurabh, how's it going?
Hey Nikhil, hey Sharad, thanks for having me on the show, guys.
No, it's, the pleasure is all ours. And so, Saurabh, I'll give a brief bio from my end, you know, based on your hopefully up-to-date LinkedIn profile. So, Saurabh is an associate director at Ranwal Group. Ranwal is obviously a premier real estate development firm based out of Mumbai. They've been around for quite some time, since 1978. Ranwal looks at residential, commercial, and organized retail segments. Yeah, I think residential seems to be a fairly big chunk of things, focused on luxury as well as affordable housing. Saurabh obviously is a civil engineer from Colombia, has done stints at Bain, and is currently an associate director at the Ranwal Group. I also saw something called LaunchCube. We can talk about it during the podcast, yeah, if you'd like. But no, well, welcome to the show. Welcome formally to the show. And, first things first, obviously, you know, would love to know a bit of context in your own, I would say, professional journey and, right, you know, the work that you do. And coincidentally, when it's been almost like a month since we started chatting to, you know, set this time up. And during that time, the second wave of COVID has hit. So would love to, absolutely, you know, touch upon the housing market in general and the impact of work from home culture, especially in the context of the second wave of COVID within metropolitan cities, from your vantage point. That's kind of going to be the, I would say, high level summary of things that, sure, you'd like to touch, but obviously we can touch a lot of other things, no problem.
No, thanks. Thanks for that introduction. If I had known you were going through my LinkedIn, I would have padded it as much as my resume. But thanks for that teaser introduction. Just to sort of summarize and give you some more context, I sort of grew up with being surrounded with the family business in real estate. You know, started in 1978 and been growing ever since, and sort of really exponentially grew in the last 15 years when, you know, the real estate cycle sort of went up but also saw the down cycle. Since then, our initial focus was always in residential, and the portfolio has expanded. But now, initially, we incidentally ventured into commercial and retail, but now that portfolio itself is growing. So a couple of years ago, we signed actually a public deal with Warburg Pincus, where the private equity player, you know, where they are investing around $200 million in capital, and the same is coming from our side to build sort of a hybrid commercial retail asset class, not asset class, but rather asset portfolio in India. And, you know, eventually look at going public via the route of REITs. So, you know, that portfolio also is growing fairly largely now, skewed a little bit more towards commercial, as you know, retail has taken a beating because of COVID and there's a lot of uncertainty around it. On my personal journey, did my schooling in Bombay and then went to Colombia with the focus of studying sort of real estate, civil engineering, but also get exposure to, you know, economics and like the business analyst roles. And sort of following that journey, ventured into Bain & Company and then strategy and etc., which eventually led me to, you know, starting here with a bit of experience in sectors which were not real estate. So being able to sort of draw those parallel insights in just my way of working and analysis has been very helpful. I guess jumping to your larger question of, you know, the second wave of COVID. It's interesting because last year when this cycle hit in quarter one, quarter two, it was a complete washout in, you know, a lot of industries, but real estate especially, because even though companies adapt and you take on agile structures, there's only that much consumer comfort in sort of cutting a check that is, you know, for a 2 crore, 1 crore transaction size. So what we noticed was that, yes, you can do a Zoom call, you can warm up the customer, and you can get him really inclined to understand the property. but the purchasing decision of actually writing the check becomes either delayed or deterred because there is no urgency creation around it.
Right.
So, you know, if I'm making such a big investment decision, sure, I'll wait and see what happens. Especially if there's a wage cut around the corner, especially if my company is going through job losses. Then, you know, as we saw the transition into Q3, Q4, the whole host of factors that came into effect, starting from stamp duty reduction, that itself went from 5% in Bombay to 2%, and in, say, Thane market, it went from 6% to 3%. So that created that moment of urgency where the government came out and said, you know, for 3 months, we are going to keep this reduced stamp duty charge. Then along with that, developers also needed liquidity, so prices came down. And on top of that, mortgage rates came down to all-time lows, like around 6.7%, 6.75% across banks. So sort of all these three factors came together and created like created two scenarios. One where this entire pipeline of people that were going to purchase in Q1, Q2 did not purchase, now had a catalyst to make a decision. So the urgency environment was created and we saw extremely high volumes in October, November, December. Similarly, in Jan, when the stamp duty sort of got corrected, went up to 3%, the consumer sentiment continued. And that time we were seeing a reduction in COVID cases across India. So, you know, job stability, etc. was coming back. And hence, that quarter itself also, the momentum continued, maybe slightly less, but actually I would say on par with quarter three. So quarter three, quarter four was a fairly strong rebound in the market. Now coming to the next financial year, it's ironic how we sort of circled the whole year and we're back to square zero. And like, I think as organization, we realize we're still not completely equipped to deal with an environment like this because there's so much uncertainty in terms of how people are going to behave that we are all in a wait and watch scenario. Like, do we keep our offices operational? Do I invest more in future land acquisitions? Do I invest in marketing? Are people going to purchase? So that hesitancy is still sort of come back. It's not as bad as it was in the first time around where there's no movement at all. But again, you know, historically, we know that the buying decision gets a little bit delayed. So really being able to access the consumer and bring him to my site, that is the first problem that, you know, we're trying to tackle. At the same time, keeping our costs under control, like making sure that our marketing spends and upfront expenses are sort of maintained.
Interesting. You know, I wanted to sort of quickly touch on, you use the word REIT and use that as a go public mode, something that you guys are thinking about. What is your view on that asset class? I mean, there are, are you thinking of it as a residential REIT? Because there aren't any in India, right? I mean, there are three, I think, commercial, but residential is would be is unprecedented in the market.
No, so it is unprecedented and we aren't thinking of doing a residential REIT because the whole idea of a REIT is also that you have income generating assets. Almost nobody will buy into a residential REIT because in India the cap rates for residential is so low. Rather just buy a bond. But ours would be sort of a hybrid of office and retail, where both would be rental generating.
And then,
so similar to
similar to
it would probably still be one of the first retail oriented. Again, this is, you know, not something that is definitive.
It
is just one of the paths to liquidation at a future stage when depending on how the markets are and how the rate reception is at that point.
This has been a theme, right? I mean, the real estate sector, Nikhil, and I also talk about it, like in the Western world is so far ahead in terms of REITs. I mean, so I know TSX had like at least 100 REITs listed. I mean, we have three and all of which have come in the last 2 years. So there's definitely a long growth runway there. You also said like cap rates, like why do you think the Indian market is such, like in terms of like where your rental yields? I mean, we're looking at low single digits. I mean, when you compare it to the West, it's, they sit higher. I mean, it's other than interest rate. Do you see any reason?
So one is we're definitely seeing a little bit of correction in that, right? Because prices have fallen a little bit. So because of that, you know, your cap rate increases, but yes, it's, or whatever, the yield that you're getting on your asset increases, but it's still nothing compared to like major cities like New York or London, right, where it'll be above 6%. What, and this is just from my understanding, is because in India, residential real estate is also an emotional purchase.
Sure, yeah.
So we, as Indians, we value having a home slightly higher than maybe in Western cultures.
Mm.
Similarly, the similar way we value gold.
Yeah.
It might not have a direct correlation to my return, but it plays into consumer sentiment. So that is why the pricing of real estate becomes higher, so the yield comes down. And the other is people have made substantial amounts of money in capital appreciation with sort of real estate in Bombay. So if you buy into the capital appreciation story,
right,
then the investor is willing to trade off with a lower operating, like the lower yield rate.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very interesting that you say that, because, like, I mean, if you look at it in the Western construct, like you mentioned London, right? I mean, the thinking is, like, from a consumer standpoint, that, okay, I can get a mortgage at, like, I don't know, 1 or 2%, and, you know, cap rate might be 6, 6.5%. It, of course, makes sense for me to finance and buy rather than, you know, take something on rental. But in India, the equation is skewed, because here, I mean, effectively, if you're looking at a cap rate of 2, 2.5%, and getting a mortgage will be like a 7, 8, or 9% decision, correct? So from that, but still the asset prices seem inflated, you know, even though, I mean, so it sounds like a supply side issue rather than a demand side issue in the Indian markets, right? And I mean, I like in Mumbai market, obviously, I'm not very familiar, but in Delhi, there's like there's such a glut of inherited residential properties that even with like lower cap rates, people are just ready to, you know, sit on them for as long as possible. Do you see that kind of changing? I mean, we are kind of in a low interest rate environment, low sustainable interest rate environment after I don't know how long. Do you see
the monetary policy also, basically their whole point of quantitative easing is they want to continue this low interest rate environment,
right?
Which is good. Sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, so do you see some sort of a flip going towards more liquidity in, you know, sale of or purchase of resi, where, you know, people go for bank funded rather than equity funded, you know, that kind of that supply pressure finally gives up to the demand, like, or is it like too early to comment on it?
I would say that, you know, like the logic that you use, right, like that logic sort of makes it very evident that, oh, it almost makes sense for me to rent the house versus actually buy the house.
Right.
But there's so many other things, like, because we're thinking of it as like a pure playing investment decision only, without, you know, the idea of like diversification. So one is people made a shitload of money from 2014 to like 2004 to 2014, and it's like prices were like double, triple every like 2 years. You're like just making a bonanza of money.
Yeah.
Now of course that's reduced, but there's still the faith that in key cities like a Mumbai, Delhi, the demand for like the urbanization story of people migrating from other states into this country and the income upliftment, which will lead to more housing, that demand will always remain robust. So, okay, you might have a lull for 5 years where it doesn't go up, but eventually there will be a substantial capital appreciation.
Right.
Which then for me offsets the fact that I have a slightly lower yield.
So it's a function of penetration.
Also, you know, at some point, I guess the thought is also it provides some kind of diversification to your portfolio if you're looking at it from a pure play investor point of view. But from a consumer point of view, the argument is very strong, right? Especially in COVID.
Yeah.
Like people realize that the value of a home is so high that tomorrow everything can go. If I don't own my home and I lose my job, I will be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
So people, you know, will then still invest in having a first home, a second home, and for parents, as the safety to give their children is a home. So a lot of times we see between, say, a 1 and 2 crore,
right,
you know, which is like the mid segment. Parents will be buyers and they will hold on to the apartment, then it will be transferred to the child,
right,
that is then living in the same building or something like that.
Right.
So there are all these other arguments, I guess, beyond the pure play mathematical evaluation of it,
mm-hmm,
which make it, which sort of give it the kind of demand that there is.
You know, this whole work from home culture sort of, you know, there is a wide narrative out there. I mean, there are people who believe that a bulk of it is going to stay, and that might be true as well. And people think we'll revert back to the mean essentially. But Do you see that as a positive to the residential sector? Because like you said, the value of home gets enhanced. But from a commercial standpoint, I mean, do you have a generally bullish view or a bearish view? Because again, we've heard both sides of the argument. I mean, some people say that, you know, the requirement for social distancing and space will have a positive effect, but the sheer volume of absolute demand will diminish. So it's a kind of a mixed impact, right? What is your view?
I actually find, you know, all of this speculation so amusing because I feel like every month the shape of the recovery curve changes.
Okay.
You know, you start with a U, goes to a V, W, K, etc. But and I think it's a lot flavored by personal sentiment. So sticking to that, like I'll just tell you my sort of experience personally also in the whole COVID journey is initially work from home came out. You know, it was sort of little difficult to kind of get on board, but then you did, and it was smooth sailing for a really long time. Then the lockdown opened up, and now for people to revert back to work from home is very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. So in the middle, when we saw office sort of demand falling, now it's coming back in a very real way.
Okay.
Because no matter what, people want to have that office space and want to come to work and actually, you know, collaborate in a physical environment.
Mm-hmm.
So COVID restrictions are there, but and especially in India, right, where a lot of employees will come from a home where they have a wife and kids also at home.
Yeah.
So personally, also when we were doing work from home, you can hear the children in the background. Right? After a point, it becomes extremely difficult to sort of continue that way.
Hmm.
And there is no sort of change of pace.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think so that will impact residential demand as such, because I don't think that's ever been like a underlying fundamental macro driver of demand. Maybe, you know, it has had thought, okay, I want an extra 100 square feet to have my office space.
Yeah.
Right.
So maybe that will be, you know, sort of up for question whether, you know, in the future people want the same thing, but that shouldn't change drastically. But I think where sort of the office demand got pulled back, that will come back a lot stronger in FY 2022.
Interesting.
And we're already seeing that with like new acquisitions happening for office spaces. Must have read about the Brookfield acquisition last year as well. So I think globally they're fairly bullish on office demand being, you know, resilient.
Right. No, that's super fascinating because I mean that's kind of the dichotomy here, right? I mean so from your perspective, in the resi side, I mean the change might be more qualitative in terms of, you know, the nature or character of the space one needs rather than actually affecting the headline requirement, and offices are here to stay. In you know, but you know, kind of coming back to homeowners, did you like in the last 2 to 3 quarters, did you notice any kind of a change in terms of, you know, more people are now taking mortgages, or, you know, like I mean, the equity component has gone down, or the demographic, a lot of people who would otherwise not have bought what they bought, they are suddenly in the mix. Did you see any such trends?
Yeah. No, I think your questions touch on some interesting trends. I'll try and break it up into two aspects. One is, you know, initially you mentioned sort of the overall demand trend, right? And here again, we saw a dichotomy in that in the luxury segment, over say a 3-bed, right? We saw a desire for increased space consumption. So right. My 3-bed would, if it was 1,000 square feet, people would prefer to go for like 1,200 square feet.
Right.
Because they want that added space. So the demand for a slightly larger home in the luxury segment went up.
Right.
But if you look at the affordable segment, we actually noticed that in the affordable markets, that smaller ticket sizes also picked up. So it's not that the 2 beds became more popular. 1 bed actually became more popular. And what we understood is that because people want their own home, there is a trend of people moving out of family homes and at least securing their own first home. Right. So the first buyer then was going towards the smaller home, whereas existing third and fourth home buyers were trying to move towards larger homes. So sort of an interesting dichotomy where you would assume that, you know, overall the trend is just towards larger carpet areas or larger ticket size. And then to the second point where you said, you know, people are taking, more people are taking home loans. So there also, I think we had, I think the thought behind that, like you nailed on the head, is that people are scared to currently, you know, put their own equity into play because there is so much uncertainty. Like, you just don't know if you're going to have your job, you know, 6 months down the line, whether your wages are going to be sort of recuperated. So what we really saw gain traction was subvention payment plans.
Okay.
So if I just pay 10% today and secure a home 3 years down the line, people, and they were willing to pay a premium for that, you know, whatever interest cost that would exist, they're willing to pay a slight premium for that, but are very, very preferable towards that option. Right. Because then their equity and their bank financing doesn't get stuck. And also to the other end, yes, we definitely saw people going for slightly higher percentage of people going for bank finance, mm-hmm. Because home loan rates have been historically so low in this last quarter,
yeah,
that it's just become a more feasible option. And that's sort of triggering people to buy because they know the sanction will happen.
Mm-hmm. But like, do you kind of, I mean, we're kind of going through we were going through an NPA crisis, you know, which was kind of like 2020-21 was supposed to be the breakout year. And that entire timeline got moved by almost 12 months. Plus now the problem is larger than what it was earlier. Do you think, I mean, you can choose to answer that if you want, but do you think there's some risk of stressed financing in the home loan segment? You know, in terms of like banks just trying to, you know, tap.
Subprime, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
Honestly, I wouldn't comment on it because I don't think I know enough.
Right, right.
I'm not exactly sure what the situation is on that front. So I would prefer not to, just speculate.
No, fair enough. This is this has been, super interesting conversation. And I know you're a bit short on time. So just I'll just kind of throw a last point, you know, before you head out. So we have kind of now entered Q1. Right. And there is already some precedent of wave two in other countries. Obviously, you know, I mean, India is a different beast in its own.
Yeah.
Do you see some sort of a repetition of the cycle that you saw earlier? Or do you see that some lessons have already been learned? And, you know, there's no way that, you know, a full lockdown is going to come back. It's going to be like at best limited lockdowns. So, you know, things like commercial, things like retail, the uptick that you have observed is actually sustainable.
Yeah, actually, I think that's a brilliant question. Honestly, everyone's grappling with that answer. So there's two parts to it. One is, you know, there was a lot of pent-up demand that came out in Q3, Q4, which caused a substantial rally across India in residential demand. But, you know, the thing is that wasn't really driven by underlying macro factors. Like, it was purely because there are these external factors that are stimulating the buying decision. But if you look at the economy, it's not that the economy is recovered. We still had degrowth for this year. There are still job losses. There are still wage cuts. So until that comes back, I don't think 2022 will have that same sort of sustainable demand, because you need the underlying macro factors to exist in order for that demand to sustain and continue. Otherwise, it's just sort of demand in thin air, you know. And the second wave of lockdown coming is definitely going to impact that further, because even though people are moving out and about, it's going to be restricted. So your retailers are, again, hotels are already seeing drops in demand. And same with retailers. The first thing the government does is shut down malls.
Mm-hmm.
So for us, the first thing is, recently there was a regulation which said, you know, people visiting malls need to be tested.
Yeah.
And this environment, first only people don't want to go to a mall. If I ask you to test, you will never come back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, because of that, you know, last year also in the retail segment, definitely rental renegotiations happened, a lot of closures happened.
Yeah.
So if it sort of goes back into a state of lockdown, those sectors undoubtedly will get hit in the first quarter. But in terms of the severity of the lockdown, I think it's going to be very difficult to ensure realistically that people stay put in their homes the way it was done first time around.
Yeah, I mean, I think the approach now here is the difference this time is there's a pro-vaccination front as well, right? I mean, the focus is more towards that. I understand Ranwal is a big company and you guys are fairly diversified, but do you think you were, somewhat nicely positioned relative to others, because he had a heavy residential mix as opposed to a commercial exposure? Like, that would have come and really helped, because I mean, whatever lockdown or whatever happens in the future, residence is seems to be immune to every kind of pandemic or something like that, right? I mean, it's elevated in importance. Do you think that's been a favorable composition to have in the portfolio?
I think definitely, right? Because of the diversification we have in asset class, even, you know, because retail and commercial is still, I think sub 20% of our overall portfolio,
mm-hmm.
even though that gets impacted because residential was so robust, you know, overall the organization grew in the year and we did, you know, we had fairly strong FY21 performance.
Yeah.
So I think actually, we had a much higher exposure to retail, you know, it would have been a very different story.
No, this was super helpful, Saurabh. Always good to get an insight from someone who is deep into the trenches when it comes to the real estate segment. Super fascinating how things are going. I wish you all the best for the future and stay safe. And this was a delightful conversation. What do you say, Sharad?
Yeah, no, thoroughly fascinating. Real estate is always interesting, and you know, people are scared of it or they love it.
And everyone has an opinion on it.
And everyone has an opinion in India about it.
Everyone has an opinion.
Yeah.
So no.
No, thank you guys. Some great questions. Obviously, really good to chat about it. Thanks for having me on.
Ours is the easier part, you know.
You're here to stir the pot.
yeah. So, Rob, this was great. And yeah, we'll be back soon with another exciting guest on Long Shots. Hopefully, sooner than 1 month.
Yeah.
And we'll be back soon with a new exciting guest. So, this is Nikhil Arora.
This is Sharad Tuplan.
Signing off. Yeah.